Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mysterious Topics and the Nighttime Podcast coverage of the History Channel's series, The Curse of Oak Island. Joining me, as usual, is Jordan from the Nighttime Podcast and Halifax. Hi, Jordan.
Hello, John, and hello to the listeners. Glad to be back for another Oak Island discussion with you.
Yeah, so we were going to do it every three episodes, and we had some scheduling conflicts, and also when the Curse of Oak Island people were posting their shows, they were kind of changing it back and forth, and so we just thought, what the heck, we're at this point, let's just wait till the end so that we can finish it off here. So we're going to start with episode 12 tonight, and 13, 14, and the final one, 15, and a little bit on a drilling down episode, which came out a week after the final episode with a little update. So we'll start with episode 12, which is called Hyde Park and Seek. And this one left off where our last podcast did. It picks up where it left off. And they were just talking about that theory that Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette gave the crown jewels to a trusted servant of Marie Antoinette who supposedly took them to Canada. And the servant later told someone that they were buried in Mahone Bay.
An interesting tale. This is the stuff that I love about the show is when they, I'm really into the digging and the technology, but I also really enjoy the theories that have historical data to back them up. I'm not so crazy about the theories where it's just somebody presenting what they think happened without any significant evidence, but these theories in particular, they seem to have several documents and old writings and whatnot that they were going back to serve as evidence of this. And I found this stuff compelling. Not that I think this is the answer to what's going on there or anything, but it's definitely a very cool lead they found. And it seemed like they were able to uncover some cool documents.
Yeah, and it was also stated in here that some of those crown jewels later turned up in Europe, but many of those jewels did not. So it's just a theory, and I don't know. I don't even really remember where they got that information. Was it in a book at that library, or was it at Nova Scotia in there?
No, I believe it was from the library, and unless I'm mistaken, it was somebody's memoir, like a servant or something like that. If memory serves me correctly, it gets foggy for me because I also do so much reading online after the episodes that a couple of weeks out, I have a hard time. Like, was that from Facebook or from a blog or from the TV show?
Yes, and since we waited this long to do this, this would be the one that is foggiest in our memories because I did not go back and watch this real recently. But so I'm not sure. But anyway, that's the theory that Franklin Delano Roosevelt was most intrigued with. And that's just a little bit of evidence that there may be something to that. And then Zena Halpern was on this with the historian, met with Doug Kroll and Rick. And they were talking about basically the Knights Templar connection and her map from an earlier episode called Hatch.
Yeah, she's very cool. She was she could be Indiana Jones's mom. It's kind of the vibe she has, where she's just like, her kitchen looks like everybody's grandmother's kitchen, and she just sits at the table, just like everybody's grandmother's table. The only difference is she's like researching the history of the Knights Templar and actually like getting somewhere with it, it seems.
Yeah, she really is, because she's the one that presented him with that kind of a hand-drawn map of an island that looked like Oak Island, and then they transposed it over the actual Oak Island map, and it matched up really well, and it had all the landmarks listed, including a couple of them that they weren't even aware of.
And namely, the one I think that played into this episode, this season the most, was the Hatch, which it sounds like now they've kind of changed the name and call it the Door.
Yes.
Yeah.
But she did mention this symbol. It's a Templar cross with four dots in each of the areas of the Templar cross. And that symbol was also on that 1921 rock that was blown up. You know, I think that was Gilbert Hedden. Was he the guy that was blowing everything up on Oak Island?
Dunfield.
Dunfield. Okay, yeah, Dunfield. So, yeah, and they found the... Well, actually, I have here that the fragment with this Knights Templar with the four dots on it was actually found by Gilbert Hedden in 1926. So,
okay.
So, possibly, I don't know if they were blowing anything up then, but anyway, it was a fragment of that rock with this on it. And then, in this episode, they also had somebody else, I think it was a different person that brought in a new cofferdam and attempted, to install it around Smith's Cove so they could drain it and look there. Did you notice that? It was a different guy, wasn't it?
Was this the guy, like the first guy, his bust it?
Yes.
Was that this episode?
No. This is this is the new one, and it's it was a lighter color, and I'm pretty sure it was a different guy because I don't even think they mentioned.
Oh yeah, this was definitely like the successful cofferdam was a different guy altogether.
Yeah,
I think that first guy probably left the cofferdam business after that thing burst. He walked away completely.
Yeah, I know. I still feel bad for that guy.
Yeah, he needs a hug.
Yeah. So anyway, this guy apparently knows what he's doing in the cofferdam business, and his succeeded. So they managed to, and they started digging then, and it's kind of funny because they're digging and they keep getting closer and closer to where the cofferdam is, and they decide, well, we can't keep digging here. The water might start running under the cofferdam. So they can, you should have thought of that before you started digging right there.
Yeah, I thought that was odd because they isolated this large area, put the cofferdam around it, drained that area. So they have this big patch, but the hole they dig is like right on the very, suburbs of the patch they cleared.
Yeah.
And then they started digging in the direction of the cofferdam. And it did look like it got to the point they were worried about not only the water getting under the cofferdam, but just the whole thing collapsing, because that cofferdam was huge. That must have weighed a ton. And as they're digging up, like through this, like pretty much like rocks and mud, the chance of it all just caving in and the whole thing, falling in on itself was probably pretty high.
Right. And they did have an archaeologist there, too, in case they found something. I guess I don't know what his job was actually, but
yeah, he was just kind of standing around. He had a camera with him and
a clipboard.
And a clipboard. But I feel bad when they have the experts like they send an archaeologist there, because you kind of see peer pressure in action. Like they found a few rocks and they're like, what do you think? And
he's
like, ah. And they're like, is it man-made? And he's like, I guess so.
And he knows he's on camera. Yeah.
Yeah. And they really hold them to it.
So then they made it. I think that they back up then and dig in a different spot, and they started going down and they discovered some timber at first, a few feet under, and some more kind of cut wood. And right then, it was getting dark. So they stopped, and then they went to the money pit dig location then. This would have been probably the next day, I think.
And I think pretty much the next three episodes took place in and around the money pit. I don't think there was much else done on the island aside from the money pit.
Yeah. This point. Well, we'll get back a little bit with the cofferdam, but this episode actually ended with a big meeting like they do so often in what they call the war room. And there was a big disagreement on this one on where to dig at the money pit location. They were going to sink I believe this would have been the third hole. And they went back and forth a lot. And I didn't know that they were going to be able to figure this out. And for whatever reason, they just said they were going to go with Craig Tester's location for this dig. And that's where episode 12 ended. And it's also where episode 13, titled 1-7, picks up. The dig starts at the money pit. And they started talking about a La Formula cipher with a university. This would have been USC professor, which is University of Southern California, Dr. Kevin Knight. And how he was decoding this La Formula cipher and how it pertained to that rock, that the supposed rock they found at 90 feet below the surface. And many translated that based on English, and actually he came up with the idea of decoding it based on French from this La Formula cipher. And so they went into a big discussion with him about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it didn't really get anywhere, though. Ultimately, what they decided was that they had 1/7 of the cipher.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Because I don't have anything else on that either, that they didn't come up with any new breakthrough as far as translating it to French.
No, I think what they decided come to the conclusion that they had a small piece of a larger document. And that's pretty much where it left off. And from there, I think we went right back as far as the episode went, we were back at Smith's Cove after that, if memory serves me.
Yes, they go back to Smith's Cove, but they also met with a treasure hunter. And I think I wrote the wrong name down because I put Gary Clayton, but that's the metal detector.
Yeah.
This is the guy that owns Little Mash Island. Do you remember him?
Yeah, he owned an island near there, and he presented to them that he thought there was, lots of gold and all that, but he didn't seem to have any evidence, and they I don't believe took him very seriously. They just said, yeah, we'll look into it.
Yeah, he says there's this foot-shaped void 231 feet below Mash Island, and he says a labyrinth of tunnels and chambers between Oak Island and Mash Island are hiding several tons of gold bullion and other treasures, and he will find it for a cut of 15%. And you said, they just, if he owns it, Mash Island, and these tunnels run between the two, he can find it on his own.
Exactly. Yeah, if he wants to sink his money into it. And it's one thing to think that there was all this stuff buried under Oak Island, but if you then expand that and you zoom out on the mystery and think that the tunnels also extend under the water to other islands and stuff, then that's a completely different thing.
Well, how far away do you know this Mash Island? Do you know where it is, or how far?
No, I've never heard of it. That whole area is just honeycombed with little islands. So it's probably one. Let me just see if I can find it on Google Maps. It may not even be labeled. There's so many.
Do you know how
small ones.
About how deep the water is between the islands around Oak Island?
It would be deep. Way too deep to dig a tunnel because it's...
So the tunnel would have to be, if it were possible, it'd have to be several hundred more feet below.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because there's the islands near Oak Island are a good distance away. Like Oak Island's just off the mainland. Oh, yeah. I'm looking at it on a map here. This is... a significant distance from Oak Island. There's no way in my mind there could ever be tunnels there. I'm trying to see if it'll show me the distance, but it looks like it's like a kilometer away, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, he said a few hundred yards, or the voiceover guy said a few hundred yards, but a few hundred yards could be 1,000, I guess.
It's about, looking at the size of Oak Island, it's about 2 full Oak Islands away from Oak Island.
Okay, yeah, that's a little... Yeah. Too far,
absolutely.
For me to buy into that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then they're back digging at Smith's Cove, and they discover what looks like layers of rocks. Mm-hmm. And so it's pretty obvious to me that somebody put them there because they had bigger rocks and then medium rocks and then smaller rocks. They were in layers of by size. I think that's pretty good evidence.
Yeah, it had the French drain kind of look to it, and they talked about French drains a lot, but it had that appearance, the larger rocks stacked up, smaller rocks on top, and then, like more like clay and silt and whatever at the very top. I don't know the composition of, because that's right on, where they're digging is right on the shore. I just wonder if they went, on the other side of the island and just dug up on the shore, what the rocks would look like underneath there. I don't know if that would be natural or not, but it did have the appearance of an unnatural formation. Like it seems like if it was natural, it would just be more of a mix, or maybe even the smaller stones finding their way to the bottom.
Yeah, I agree. And if you think about it, if you're building those flood tunnels, they aren't going to be, and they were built, back in the 1700s, they're not going to be poured concrete or something, and you have to figure out a way to keep them from plugging up. And the French drain system that you talked about is the way that they did those kind of things back then. They just made layers of bigger rocks and smaller rocks to keep the silt out as much as possible.
Absolutely. And if you want to talk about how, like, the longevity of a properly designed French drain in Machu Picchu, they had that designed, or that when they originally built it using this same technique where they had the larger rocks, smaller rocks and whatnot. And they say in Machu Picchu, when they discovered it, which I think was like in the 50s or something, the water irrigation system that was built under the ground still worked. Like, pretty much every drop of water that landed on Machu Picchu was managed and found its way to, you know, just the right spot. But it's, that system still works, although it's not nearly as old as what people think of, would be in Oak Island. But if those are properly designed, they can last hundreds of years.
Oh, I don't know. I think, yeah, Machu Picchu, it's old, but also it's at the top of a mountain. So the chances of it getting, like, this is under the ocean, whereas Machu Picchu is up, way up high on a mountain. So they're not going to have the same silt problem, I wouldn't think.
Actually, I'm looking at the age of Machu Picchu. I didn't realize how old it was. That was built in like the 1500s.
Yeah, yeah. So this is almost the exact same time. Now, the Spaniards never even found Machu Picchu. How well hidden that place was, and at the top. I mean, they even tried, and they could never even find the trails up there.
Did you ever do a Machu Picchu episode?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, I thought so. But yeah, it's an incredible site, but I did read that when they found it, although it was in ruins and had been sitting to nature for hundreds of years, that the French drains and whatnot that were built in there still worked, which is pretty incredible.
And that's interesting because obviously they weren't French. So,
yes, you know, Spanish drains.
Well, like I said, the Spanish never even found where Machu Picchu was, although of course they basically destroyed their culture, the Inca, and stole all of their treasures down in all of the places closer to the sea. And that's one of the theories. That's the one I think that Dan Blankenship is really keen on, that the Spaniards had raided, you know, areas of in South America, Peru, and took some of those treasures and hid them at Oak Island.
It'd be incredible.
So, then of course, on this episode still now, they are at the site T1, which is the tester chosen hole. Mm-hmm. Tester 1 stands for Money Pit. Digging there brings up a big vertical timber, and it was at about the 102-foot level. And this is the area now. This is the Money Pit, of course. In 1850, the Truro Company drilled through a chest that had metal pieces, little bits of gold on it, chain and that. And then it went further and further down than that, the drill. I forget, it was like 20 feet or so, and it hit some metal, and it couldn't go any further. It couldn't get through the metal.
Mm-hmm.
At least what they thought was metal.
Yeah, at least that's kind of what the legend says, is they got so far, hit metal, and couldn't drill through it. So it's always been kind of thought that there's like a layer of lead or, you know, something solid down below, but in my mind, it could have just been bedrock that was harder than the layer before it. Cause you'd think that what they would have used for like well digging and stuff back then would be primitive compared to the tools they've been using now.
Yeah. And that's what they did back then in 1850. The Truro Company tried to dig a shaft just 10 feet away to go right down parallel and then dig over. And of course, it flooded when they got down. I don't know if it was even halfway. It might have been a little past that, and obviously that foiled their opportunity there. And then this show ended, episode 13, with them pulling up a round log, actually, from this T1 dig. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of hopeful. They thought this could have been one of the original timbers that were laid every 10 feet. So that's what they were hoping, anyway.
And it did look like an unusual log to find deep underground. It's just everything they find, or no matter what they find, it's been, that area's been dug up and backfilled. So there's always the question about what it could be. But with the story and the legend that there was all the horizontal laid logs, this could have been one. And that was kind of what they theorized. And that is possible.
Right. And so then we pick up with episode 14, which is titled Of Sticks and Stones. And this starts with a third money pit dig, and they're at the, was that the tester? Was the tester the third money pit dig? Yes, it was, right? Okay.
I believe so, because they had the C one, I think, is what they did first.
Yeah.
They did the tester, and then they did the gal, which was like George
that,
and Anne.
Right. The that's Gina. The yeah. We'll get to that. That's the. I just wanted to make sure I didn't goof this up. So, okay. So, Of Sticks and Stones starts with the third money pit dig at the 118 foot depth, and they had a goal of 160 feet, and it starts to rain. And it's, I mean, really raining pretty hard. They're all standing there with their raincoats. And they just mentioned, I think it was Marty that said, well, we can keep digging, but as soon as the lightning, if they get any sign of lightning, we got to stop right away. And almost immediately there's lightning.
Yeah. And they're standing next to, a giant metal tower, basically, which is the thing they're drilling with. Yeah.
That
makes sense to suspend that dig.
So they did stop when the lightning hit, but they did have a couple of pieces of wood that they wanted to take to Dan Blankenship and have him check them out. And one was it looked like a wedge. It was a wedge. And they took that to Dan to see what he thought of it. So anyway, they were looking at the wedge, and they seemed to think that he said what they probably use it for was those logs, putting those, and getting them in the corners, so they'd hit the wedge with a.
Yeah, that wedge was an interesting looking piece, but again, the question remains whether it was something that was left by a searcher or something original.
Yeah, and they do take these all these pieces of wood, and they have them analyzed, so that is telling. However, so you're digging a hole and somebody else dug that same hole and left wedges and other timbers down there, and you're digging a hole and you find them, and maybe you're just going to put them to use right away. Instead, if some of these people digging back in the early 1900s and that are probably not as, they're probably not thinking, well, let's go get this analyzed. I don't even know if they could get it analyzed back then. So they're just like, well, look at that. It's interesting. Let's use it. And they could have just left it there too. So,
yeah, but I think like people watching the show are often hoping that they find like or expecting them to find the treasure and all the stuff. But I think even like digging down and finding stuff left behind from treasure hunters 150 years ago, like that's pretty awesome anyway.
Yeah, it is. But you have to be able to figure out who put it there with all of these people, and we know the history of how many and how. Some of them dug so extensively that it's just like a big pile, big mess right now. You wouldn't even, it's so hard to determine what's what.
Oh, yeah. It's like treasure hunter soup, like as you dig down there.
Yeah, yeah. So, and also they brought in a couple of stonemasons, and they wanted to have them analyze the Nolan's Cross boulders, a couple of them, to see what they thought of them.
Yeah, and this scene, they were really impressed with the stones, the masons, but the results I found somewhat underwhelming. Like the bottom of the stone they thought had been like polished or whatever, but my thought was like, if these were like glacier stones, as they were being pushed, across the island or the ground or whatever, hundreds or thousands of years ago or whatever, you'd think it would have ended up kind of polished on the bottom anyway, as well as who knows what Fred Nolan was doing with these stones over the years.
Yes, but it is, it's possible. Now, if somebody just moved that boulder into place, I don't think the island's big enough for them just to find it on the island and move it.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have had to maybe found that somewhere on Nova Scotia on the mainland part and drag it a long way and put it on a ship and bring it over there in order to get that kind of smoothness on the bottom, I would think anyway. But you're right.
Yeah.
A glacier could have been pushing that thing all the way from, New York or something, and eventually it got left there.
Mm-hmm. That part of Nova Scotia, and the further you go in that direction, there's more and more of those stones. They're glacier stones. Like a lot of people know, there's a spot in Nova Scotia called Peggy's Cove, and that's on the very tip of Nova Scotia. And when you go there, the type of stones that make up Nolan's Cross are just everywhere. As you're driving down the highway and you look just off the side of the highway into people's fields or whatnot, it's just those stones all over the place. And I think it's from a glacier a long, 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 long time ago. But it's like kind of as you're going towards Peggy's Cove, it seems like there's more and more of those rocks the closer you get. And Oak Island's not too far from that area. So I think that those stones, in my mind, it would make sense that they were on Oak Island always. But the fact that they're lying now in a cross formation is definitely unique.
Yes. And I think we talked about Peggy's Cove. Maybe it was even our last episode. I know we talked about it recently, and that was they went with Terry DeVoe. Is that his name?
Yeah, that's
right. And he showed it. Wasn't that Peggy's Cove?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that area. Because okay. Where they were is the spot where it's, you know, those stones are everywhere.
Yeah,
you're right. We did bring that up. But it's like Oak Island is not too far from there, but it's when I, because I've seen the stones of Nolan's Cross many times. And when I was near them, it just reminded me so much of being at Peggy's Cove.
Yeah. Okay, so they're back at that T1 site, and they're getting down to the 148-foot level, which is pretty close to their goal of 160 feet. And Rick makes the comment about how he always thought that the original timbers that they talked about at every 10 feet were huge logs, but they're pulling out more pieces of timbers that are, what would you say, like maybe only six to eight inches in diameter. And he's starting to think, well, maybe they were smaller. I mean, they weren't really used to support any real weight, so they probably didn't have to be huge.
Yeah. It's hard to say. It's like they were pulling up timbers of all different sizes and shapes, but it's if you found an old mine, I would think you would find all sorts of different size and shape wood in there. So it's what they're pulling out of the ground to me would be consistent with some kind of underground operation. Is that operation burying treasure or is it digging it up? Who knows?
Right. So then this is where they get very frustrated because they were just to the point where they knew that they should be getting something, and they were just getting nothing but clay, and they were very frustrated. And I think Marty threw his hard hat, and he just couldn't believe it. And so then they kind of switched to the war room again, where they're discussing everything, and they're contemplating what to do now. All of them very discouraged, and Rick, of course, the optimist always says he wants to dig another hole, even though they've already spent supposedly their allotment for this year. And, you know, Marty is saying, you know, there comes a time when enough is enough. And so it's really sounding like they're at odds and they might be ready to throw the towel in for the year at least.
But then they managed to come into another couple hundred grand, I guess, they didn't realize they had.
Yeah, well, that's it. So they were building this all up on how they had just enough money to do this one dig, but then they were going to overextend a little bit to also do the flushing out of 10X. And so now they get to this point, and all of a sudden, miraculously, well, okay, we're going to do one more hole. It should be Rick that chooses where it is because, you know, nobody's got more in it and invested. It was all a touching moment and Rick was getting a little choked up. And so anyway, that's where that episode ends. And we go to the final episode of season 4, episode 15. And it was a 2-hour episode titled Blood is Thicker. And they start with this final hole. They're going to name it after their parents.
Yeah. Isn't that sweet?
Yeah. Yeah.
George and Ann Lagina, I think they call it the gal hole.
Yeah, because I think it was Rick that said about his mom when Marty mentioned her, he said, yeah, she was quite a gal. So, well, that worked out pretty good.
Yeah, that's good.
So anyway, so it's called Gal 1. And so they start out, actually, they're just digging it up and they're taking the spoils to another location where, well, what do we have there? We've got the metal detector guy, Gary. You know, it's Gary Drayton. So I bet you that guy that owned that Mash Island was Gary Clayton. That's what I had written down. And I thought, yeah, so those two names are so close. I thought I actually had them confused, but
Maybe that's why they didn't pursue Masha Island. They're like, that would just be too confusing.
Yeah, Gary Drayton and Gary Clayton, yeah. So anyway, Gary Drayton is the metal detector guy. And he's there with Marty and Charles Barkhouse, and they're going through the spoils. And they find some interesting things. They found a sailing cloth needle, supposedly, and it certainly looked like some kind of a handmade needle that someone would have used on an old-time ship to repair sails and that. And also what they thought was a coin, but I think it turned out to be a button.
Yeah, a little underwhelming.
A little underwhelming, and I think they said it was this from a British military, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So everything Gary Drayton has found seems to be from... Isn't that odd? He found those when he was metal detecting near the surface Samuel Ball's property. And now he's going through the spoils and he finds also supposedly British military things. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, that's strange. But he's... You'd think that whole island would have been gone over with a metal detector at this point.
Oh, wow. You'd think so. If you know, any little kid that lives there that could, you know, jump in a dinghy and go over with his metal detector for the day, that'd be a... Of course, there's so many holes around there. I don't think I want my kid going over there by himself.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
Without a parachute or something.
Yeah. Or a little long piece of rope tied to his ankle. But, so... Then, while they're doing this, Gene and Joe McGinnis showed up. They were on there last year, the year before, actually, along with their sister, Joyce. And they came back, and they give the news that Joyce had died. She's actually a younger sister, and they wanted to leave a little memento that has some of her ashes in it in the area. Now, you have to remember, these are the McGinnis family. They are descendants of Daniel McGinnis, the supposed kid that started this whole search in 1795.
Yeah, it was a cool way to end the season with them coming and, you know, and honoring the sister who was on last season.
Yeah.
Although a little sad way to end the season, though. I found that a bit emotional.
Yeah, it is. But they had brought that cross along with them that they said that Daniel had found only 30 feet down, I think. I think she said they found three treasure chests back in 1795, probably. Mm-hmm. And this was in one of them, and they had it analyzed by by that expert in analyzing things. I forget what she was.
Dr. Laurie?
Yes, Dr. Laurie. And
I kind of question. She was a little too convinced of some things, like when she presented her opinion on the nail from the ship's galleon, the Spanish ship galleon,
yes,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Just the way that was done, it seemed very much to me like TV magic.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, yeah, because she did say at first, "Well, this I'm gonna have to take this and analyze a little." But she was obviously hinting that it was something unique or special.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get to that in a minute. But she's looking at this cross and she says right away, well, this is very interesting. And she dated it sometime in the 1500s. And it was, did she say it was Spanish, I think? I got it written right down here. I don't know why I don't look at my notes more often. She said it was somewhere between 1500 and 1700 originally, that it held emeralds in each one of the holes. And it was from the Spanish Indies, which would have, back in that time, that meant anywhere, Peru, Mexico, anywhere in where the Spanish had landed and raided, apparently. And you're right, the way she did that, she looked at it and said, well, obviously all this, I don't know how you'd know that there were all emeralds in that thing. There may have been other, that, you know, it's very, very likely that they were used to inset some sort of stones in there, but I don't know why it's just had to be all emeralds necessarily.
Yeah, she was just so sure of her findings.
Right. So, and then, you know, like I said, she said that she'd need more time to analyze the spike, but then when she did come back, she definitely confirmed that it was from a Spanish galleon, and it would have dated from 1575, I think, to 1600 or 1625. And then Jack Begley said, well, how certain are you that it's from a Spanish galleon? And she said, I'm 100% certain it's from a Spanish galleon. So
yeah, that was an odd scene. I kind of cringed at that. I just could never imagine like a scientist reacting to the question that way.
Right.
Because I don't know how she could be like, I just my opinion is like a scientist or someone who's science based would never answer the question that way. They would say something like all the evidence, you know, points in that direction. Although, because you could never be absolutely sure unless you saw someone pull it out of a Spanish galleon.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. That was just my, when she said that, she kind of lost credibility with me.
Well, Gary Drayton also said that he felt it was from a Spanish galleon, and he said he found hundreds of them in the Florida area when he was metal detecting, and I would take his word for it more so.
Yeah, but I don't know if he would even say, I'm 100% certain that's what this is.
Right. But so far out of that swamp, they found that 18-foot board, and that was old, that was dated to that time frame. And they also talked about Fred Nolan, and they showed when he was still alive and Rick was talking to him, he had a book with pictures in it of the things that he had found over the years in that swamp. And there were pieces of a ship like the scuffers, I think they're called, and you know, the parts of the little kind of holes in the little things that you'd wrap rope around or run rope through, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So there is evidence pointing to at least pieces of a ship or ships in the swamp. Now, people could have, if they had pieces where they were repairing it and they had things that were broken, and they, you know, where would you throw it? You'd throw it in the swamp. It doesn't mean that there's a whole ship in there necessarily, but they're seeming to feel like there is.
Yeah, and like stuff like that board could easily have just washed up in there during a storm.
Yeah, and well, we'll get to that part in a minute, but you know, they've been contending that the swamp has been man-made and that they built basically a wall or sort of coffer dams on either side to make it one island, but they still haven't really gone to look further. Fred Nolan told them there were timbers below that road that goes right along the water there, and you know, they still haven't even, if they're going to start thinking there's something going on in the swamp, you'd think they'd want to find that out.
Yeah, I'd love to see them dig up the swamp.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that's kind of, I think, that's left for them to do, is like a major dig there. And I guess there's complications to getting approval to do that, but that's something that they could probably put a whole season around. Because even if there's nothing treasure-related there, they're going to find a bunch of stuff in a swamp.
Yeah, and they could just at least dig right around where that road is, where they think, where Fred Nolan told them exactly where he ran into timber, supposedly. So they should be able to locate that if it's there. And that would at least give them the proof that somebody did make that swamp, wall that off. Mm-hmm. So we're back to the spoils again with Jack Begley and Gary Drayton going through. They find a metal, it looks almost like sheet metal, and there's a square hole in it. And Gary Drayton says, well, you know, the nails back then were kind of handmade, and they pounded them into squares. So it could possibly be that square hole could have been made from a nail in sort of a tin sheet metal. Now, these are the spoils. They're at a different location, but they're bringing it from this Gale 1, and they also started hitting so they're bringing up pieces of metal, pieces look like sheet metal, and also charcoal, what they think might be charcoal.
They're finding some interesting stuff. That this Gale hole was the one that proved to be the most fruitful.
Yeah, just it worked out really well that they actually had money that they didn't think they had to do this final dig, because it definitely was the most interesting one of the year. So anyway, they're bringing up the sheet metal and the charcoal, and they start theorizing, at least the voiceover man does, that there possibly somebody could have had a furnace down there, a little sheet metal furnace, put charcoal in it to make a fire. And the reason you do that is if you're digging way down there, you start a fire, it draws oxygen down. I guess they did this in old mines. They'd build a little fire and it would draw the air down so the miners could breathe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. It was, you know, whatever they found, it was something pretty heavy duty. And it was something old. You could tell it was basically handmade with metal, and that they don't really do that much anymore.
Yes, but it could have also been some of the early digs in the 1800s that put a furnace down there just for that purpose. They're getting down.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's what, like, even some of the people who died during the various searches have died due to combustible equipment being used down below, like a steam furnace kind of thing that exploded at one point. This was in the early 1800s, I think.
Yes.
But there would have been lots of, like, it wouldn't be unusual for them to have found charcoal because there should have been a lot of wood burnt down there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a couple of the people that got killed there were. That was an incident where a couple of them died. Mm-hmm. So they're digging down this Gal 1, and suddenly the drill bit got stalled. So they were hitting a metal object. They couldn't get past it, so they attached this thing. It's pretty cool. They call it a chisel bit. What it basically is a 4-ton battering ram, and they just, like, let it fall down there and bring it back a little bit and let it fall again, and in an effort to break through, and they were actually fairly successful in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So they were able to keep digging. Okay, so this chisel bit smashed through the metal, and then they went with a smaller hammer grab, that smaller one, that little green one. Apparently they were worried about kind of getting below where the casing ended, and they didn't want to get snagged on it, you know, just like,
yeah, get the thing stuck.
Just like when you're fishing, you don't want to get stuck on a rock or a
weed. Yeah. Yeah, so then I think that was pretty much their last grab, and I think this is where they pulled up that final kind of corner piece of metal it looked like it had like 8 holes in it.
Yeah, and it looked exactly like it was at one point at a 90-degree angle, something that you'd put around some sort of wood to fasten it together at a corner at a right angle.
Like, for example, a treasure chest?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I thought that was that same Dr. Laurie's finding. She's like, that was, you know, that's from a treasure.
That's the corner of a treasure chest. Well, it's a corner piece of anything.
Of anything, yeah. Not necessarily a treasure chest. It could have been a house or a boat or
a deck. A deck.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what they use them for now, that sort of thing. But of course, and I don't know. I don't know if they actually aged that metal or were able to, you know, figure out how old it is. They did bring up looked like a washer also. I don't know how long they've been using washers.
You'd think it would have been a long time, but
yeah,
I don't know. But regardless, they found some cool stuff down there. Who knows how old it is, but they're certainly getting to the point in digging up the stuff that somebody left down there regarding this treasure, whether it's searchers or the original treasure hiders. But I guess that's pretty much what the dig ended at was would have been at this point.
Yeah, this was basically it for the year. But they, like you said, you know, they did pull up that. It is intriguing. It could be a treasure chest. I don't know. You'd think that if it were, then there'd also be some of the treasure right there too. You'd think they would have been able to pull some of that up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it could have gotten that separated from what was inside the treasure, or even more of the treasure chest itself, or the chest itself, we should call it. It could, you know, I mean, it could have been somebody that put a body in a coffin type thing. They could have used that too. Who knows?
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll find out next season.
Well, yeah, we'll see. But so anyway, you're right. They ceased operations and they're going to have all the stuff analyzed. Now, they did come back with some of the information. For instance, that button that was found, they said that was from 1775 to 1825. So that fits right in with Daniel McGinnis finding this in 1795, so that earlier time frame would fit in. Mm-hmm. And so they, of course, they have their little war room thing at the end, and they're deciding where they're going to go from here, because when we talked about the first one, they made it sound like this is going to be their last year, their last ditch effort. They called it going for broke. So it was this kind of a little bit of a tense feeling, and they say, okay, now where do we go from here? And you're thinking, oh, they're going to say, well, we really can't afford to do this anymore. And there's kind of a little bit of silence, and then Dan Blankenship speaks up, and he said, well, you know, if I might make a suggestion, maybe, you know, there's a lot of emotion running through today and that. Maybe you should just kind of take the winner to decide what your next moves are. And then Charles Barkhouse immediately says, well, I think we should keep going. It was kind of funny. Charles is raring to go, which
yeah.
I would be too if I were sitting there. But of course, the money's not coming out of my pockets.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's kind of where they left it. And really, I thought at that time, that's really all we were going to have on it.
Yeah, and it was at that point, after I watched this last episode, I had sent you that article. The producer of the show named Kevin Burns, he did an interview with a local newspaper. Well, sort of newspaper. It's like the biggest newspaper in Halifax. They've been going forever. They've been on strike. All the journalists have been on strike for the last like year and a half. and what happened was the newspaper, it's called the Chronicle Herald, they hired a bunch of like amateur journalists to keep the newspaper running. So now the newspaper has become like the laughing stock of the city, because like their headlines will have typos or grammatical errors, or they'll use the wrong spelling of there, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's not good.
But what ended up happening was all the striking journalists, they set up their own website where they're continuing to work and write news. So they have a website where they just put out a free paper every day. That's much better than the one lots of people are paying for. But anyway, Kevin Burns, the producer of the show, did an interview with the striking reporters. And in that, this article came out like a week ago, the day after this, the finale aired. And he's all but said, like, they're not coming back for another season. Cause I had sent it to you to read saying, like, look, they're done.
Yeah, that's what we were thinking. By the way, those people that people they hired to the scabs, I guess you call them.
That's what they call them.
Yeah. So they're, it's always not a good thing when the people, that leave comments after the article have better grammar than the people that are writing the story.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing that you notice if you see some of those, if you ever read comments after a story, sometimes they're so entertaining. I just got to keep going through them because one person says, writes something terribly grammatically wrong, and then people start just attacking him based on that. And it's just like, oh, this is almost too good of entertainment.
Yeah. It's just watching, you know, it's a bunch of humans falling over each other.
Yes.
It's kind of sad, but it's the state of our world.
Yes, it is. So anyway, that's where we thought it was going to end, but they had a episode a week later after the final episode, one of those digging down ones with Maddie Blake, and I just watched it today, and so did you, Jordan, and both of us, we talked about this briefly before we started. It was really kind of disappointing because basically it was just a recap of the season until, what, maybe 10 minutes worth of information.
Yeah, and that'd be bearable if every episode didn't have recaps.
Yes.
So it's like, if you've been watching the show, it's not like you forgot about the stuff that happened earlier, because they're recapping constantly. So it was completely unnecessary. Maybe if this drilling down episode had aired in a month and a half or something, it would have made more sense.
Well, you know what I would have liked to see, for if you have an hour show, they had all these guys at the end, and like I said, maybe 10 minutes worth of credible information. But what they could have done is spend 10 minutes with each one of those people individually first, and then have the final meeting in the room. Because you'd really like to know what everybody's thinking, almost like when you have people from a crime scene. You want to talk to them separately. You want to know what they're thinking, and then put them together. Jack Begley, we don't hear a whole lot from him. I'd like to hear him really find out more about him, what he's thinking, what his thing is, and the same with Alex Lagina, some of these people that we don't hear much from. They just kind of are there.
And not only do we not hear from them, we don't know anything about them.
Like
Jack
Bagley's,
he's a major character, and they've never gone into like anything really about him. He's the son-in-law of one of Rick or Marty or something, but
he's the I think he's the stepson of Craig Tester.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
Okay. But he's like he's arguably like the number three guy on the show.
Yeah, he does a lot of the physical work. He's you know, he'll be the first one to jump right in the swamp or jump in a mucky hole, and he's all gung ho. And I'd like to hear more from him. I just want to get to know him a little bit, and you know what his background is and what he's thinking.
And even last year, the drilling down they did last year, it was more set up like a talk show sort of thing. You remember the Dave Blankenship and a few of the other one guys were like in a studio. Charles was there and stuff. That was much bit like this was kind of silly. I don't know what they were thinking.
Well, that was I think that was called the Dave Blankenship show, wasn't it?
that was awesome.
Yeah.
But this one tonight was just like they were at the winery. We saw that. Big deal. They have a Templar.
And what was that all about? They actually built that thing that opened up in the big silo or something?
I'm thinking that thing that opens up, they probably drop like grain down there, like something in there. Like it must have a purpose. Or maybe it's just this elaborate light that they, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But when they showed the Templar cross on the ground, it looked like it was just painted there earlier that day. So. You know, because if this is like in a basement of like a winery where there was all the kegs getting moved around and stuff like that, the floor would have been scuffed up a bit. It looked brand new.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. I don't know. I was expecting to see a, you know, like a missile come out or something. It didn't look like a big silo the way it opened up. Like,
yeah,
like something that Dr. Evil would have built.
Yeah. But the drilling down, I was. We saw the minute in the winery. They all talked at the end and showed the results of their tests, which there wasn't a lot to it. It was, you know, they had a range that most of the artifacts were from that fell right in the era that they were expecting and that they were hoping for.
Yeah.
But really everything they found seemed to be from that era. So it's not like a smoking gun or anything. But I guess the biggest thing that came out of the drilling down was the fact that they talked about season 5 as if it was a definite.
Yes, they definitely are going there. Now, that doesn't mean that the show is going to continue, but they're definitely going back. That's the way it sounded. So I don't know, you know, because they're going to go back. That article that you sent me, they did talk about how they were really reluctant to do this at all. So if for whatever reason the History Channel decided not to continue doing this, I think And they still wanted to. I think they would continue doing it.
Yeah. I have no doubt that they're genuine in their interest in the island. But I can't imagine they turn away the money. Like if they're going to be doing work there, they might as well have it filmed. Like everybody.
No, they wouldn't at this point, now that they're not reluctant any longer, because you're right. I'm sure they're getting the money to help them continue. But what I'm saying is, if it's not working for the History Channel anymore, because at some point TV series start running their course.
Yeah, this doesn't seem to be what we talked in, I think in our last episode we did, where the ratings have been of season 4 have been blowing away the prior seasons. The last episode, Blood is Thicker, was the most watched episode of Curse of Oak Island, the entire series. It did 3.79 million viewers. Comparing it to the finale last year was 3.4. Finale season 2 was 3.0 and the finale of season 1 was 2.9. So it's a, you know, a continuous gain. They're not going to, I don't know if there's ever been a TV show that been canceled, that was canceled as the ratings were increasing. It would be very unusual.
Well, I'm glad that it seems to be working for them then. If it's building an audience, that's good.
Despite not really breaking any new ground or finding anything, people are still jumping on.
Yeah, I guess I question a little bit. I can understand, you know, when they said they're going for broke and they focused on so many different areas that they seem to just find just little bits in every area, but nothing. You think, you know, just go for it in one of those areas, whatever one you think there's something there. And I kind of think that swamp, because who was it? Was that the that was the gentleman I talked to about the Aztec theory and that, who said
John O'Brien.
Yeah, John O'Brien, who claims in his theory that the money pit area is actually sort of a ruse to make them dig there and waste their time and not, and whereas they actually buried and hid the actual treasure under the swamp in a chamber. So I would think it'd be a lot easier to dig. And he claimed that that treasure is, or the room or whatever, is not that far underground, like maybe 40, 50 feet. So that's so easy to check out his theory.
I wonder if it,
just
if
drill they, a whole couple holes there and see.
Yeah, and because they did do a bit of preliminary digging at, in the swamp. They had the backhoe there digging up a bit, but I wonder if they could use like their big machine and do one of the big borehole kind of things and just see what they run into.
I would think so. But and they were digging there. And I forget. I think they had to stop because they were concerned that the backhoe was going to kind of slide in there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so somebody that they've already had on their show that came up with the theory, and if they brought him over there, he could pretty much pinpoint where that is based on the swamp and that. They may want to consider doing that. And if they're going to drain the swamp next year again, which it sounds like they may, you know, how much would it cost? How much money would it cost for them to drill a few holes 40 feet down to see if they hit something?
Yeah, I just think if they do another season, like they've drained the swamp now, I think the last three seasons. If they do another season, which it sounds like they're going to, I think they just have to find something new, because digging holes has happened so much this season that I think people would be turned off if that's what they do next year. So I don't know. They talked about that new technology that would allow someone to see in murky water. They talked about that in the drilling down.
That may allow dark
vision or something.
Yeah.
But that may allow for a bit more exploration, a 10X. And I think I speak for both of us when I'd be interested to see what happens or what they could find in 10X. People are still interested in that. But I think they would just need to find something significant and interesting to make another compelling season of the show. Because this season I found dragged on big time. This could have been 6 episodes.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. It did, from the way they made it sound, it did drag on. So here's my suggestion to them, because as I said, like you're saying, they have to find something fairly significant. And so this one I was just talking about, it's only 40 feet down. That would be a relatively inexpensive thing to do. The other one is back at that cofferdam that we were talking about earlier. And by the way, in this drilling down episode, Maddie Blake is talking with several of them, Charles Barkhouse, Hensky, and Jack, I think, Begley. And there was, I don't know, there were five or six of them. He was talking to, they're standing on that cofferdam. They're standing on it. Now, this isn't the one that busted a hole in it, but they're just standing there casually talking about the season of Oak Island. And then when they're done, they start walking off. They're telling them, don't step on the seam. Whatever you do, don't step on the seam. And I'm just thinking, yeah, that's great. I could just see Maddie Blake walking off at the end and poking a hole in that thing.
Yeah.
So my suggestion would be those locations, like the cofferdam, which is relatively shallow. They don't have to dig that far. It's not that big of a – it wouldn't be – big of a expense, money-wise or man-hour, to really find out if there are those French drains, those box drains under there. And the same with the swamp. The theory of John O'Brien's where it wouldn't be that far under, it just wouldn't be that difficult of a task to at least just sink a drill down there and see if you hit anything interesting.
Yeah. They'll find something interesting to do next season. I'm sure of it, but I don't know. I'm going to visit there this summer twice for tours, so maybe I'll see something cool.
Yeah, and the other thing at the money pit, I think that every time that the hole didn't work out, they filled it back in. Is that right?
Well, that's what I thought until the drilling down episode. They had, they were standing next to C1 and they had it all like capped off with like a nice like plaque kind of on the side of it.
Oh, okay.
I think the holes are still there and I think they're going to stay there. Cause remember in drilling down, Rick or Marty or one of them said like, we may go back in here. We're not done here yet.
Okay. That's good. Because I was just thinking, why would you do that? Unless you were saving money with the casing and you wanted to use the casing over again. But yeah, to keep it there. And at some point, if you sink a casing and you start getting something interesting, but all that stuff slides way over, it might fall right under one of the other holes because they're very close together.
I don't even know if they could get the casings out of there. Like getting it down's one thing, pulling it back up would probably be a lot. It should be going against gravity.
Yeah, I don't know either. I have no idea if that would work or not.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't think there's much else that to discuss on this episode, on this season.
No, I think, well, we covered this season at all. I guess we could just have some few closing thoughts about anything with the overall Oak Island phenomena that we've been covering.
My closing thoughts would be that the show, despite there being four seasons and 10 episodes a season, so we probably watched 40-something hours of this, it really hasn't changed anything that I believe or think about Oak Island. When the show started initially, I expected things to change and them to be able to put X's through some spots and move the story along. But I think if the television show ended today, it would have no effect on the legend or what people theorize is going on there. Like, I really think up until this point, they haven't done much of anything aside from just bringing more attention to the island. And that's for me a little disappointing. Like, their focus, like they're kind of trying to do everything all at once. But I get that, because if they just focused, let's say if they had a whole season dedicated to 10X and they're like, we're just going to stay at 10X the entire time until we rule it out or find the answer, that probably wouldn't be very interesting. So they have no choice but to jump all around to make it interesting for TV. But I would really love it if they could solve something.
Yeah, I agree, because they really haven't found anything that is real evidence that any one of these theories is what actually happened. I'm beginning to think more and more, as I've been thinking this for several years now, probably since somewhere around the second season, that it very well could be some sort of an ancient mine that people discovered over the years. And so all of these theories about what may be buried there, people were probably talking about them back then. And with the whole pirate thing, people were probably thinking there's something hidden there, when in fact all it was a mine all along. And, you know, maybe somebody did put something there. And obviously somebody did fill it in, and they put these logs every so often. And I'm just trying to think that if somebody were through with an ancient mine, you know, back then in those years, would they actually do that? Would they close it back up so nobody would fall into it? Because that's what you'd do now. Is that what they did? And why did they put this stone? And that's the thing, that stone we've never actually seen. Did that stone really exist that said 40 feet below 2 million pounds are found? That's part of the mystique, and we don't know if that actually existed. But yeah, it could have been somebody filling in an old mine shaft that they didn't want somebody falling down and getting killed in or something, and there may not be anything down there.
Yeah, they'll often flood mines. Where I'm from in Cape Breton, it's historically the industry has been coal mines, and yeah, when they were decommissioned, often they'd block off the entrance and flood the mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, they've done that here too. You don't have to flood it necessarily. All you got to do is stop pumping it out.
Yeah, exactly.
And they just fell right up, at least in our area here. That's the case. So anyway, I want them to find some real evidence so that we can stop thinking that, you know, this is just some ancient mine and they are sinking all this money into, you know, nothing more than a big old hole in the ground that was filled in.
Or just find something that's just something new. Like, a part of me would like them to just go somewhere on the island where nothing's ever been done and just dig and just see what's under there and maybe find something that hadn't been. Because I think with the amount of stuff that was done and the amount of digging that's happened, any remnants of the original works are probably long gone. Or if they found it, it would just be disputed whether it was original or searcher tunnels and all that stuff. They should just, I think, like, it'd be interesting if they just went somewhere no one ever worked and see what they could find and maybe find something brand new.
Like, for instance, the hatch or the door or whatever they're calling
like,
it.
Yeah, 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 just see if there's anything there. And they probably will.
Well, they did. Yeah, they did mention that at the end when I think Rick had something written there about the door. It's not a trap.
Exactly. Yeah, that was from Drilling Down, right?
Yeah, it was the very end of Drilling Down. So they did kind of hint that they were probably going to do that next year, go to that spot. And that's exactly what you're talking about, a place they really haven't examined at all. Jack jumped down there with a hand shovel and dug about a foot down, and that was about all the exploration they've done there.
Yeah, but just one or two scoops from a backhoe would answer the question.
Yeah. So, okay, well, I don't know. I don't have anything else, Jordan.
No, but it was great to do this with you, John. I appreciate you doing this. This was fun to watch the show and be able to talk it out with you.
Yeah, and thanks. It was great having you doing it as the local person. I think it worked out really well.
Good.
It was a fun year. We're hoping for a little more, but who knows? Maybe next year.
Until then.
Thank you all for listening. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Thanks.